There are no words to describe those last days. They were truly the epitome of horror. We sang.
More than 1 million people were killed at Birkenau, the death camp of Auschwitz, but a handful of women survived by agreeing to play in the camp's orchestra. Ars Choralis, a nonprofit group based in Woodstock, New York, will be honoring those women on Saturday, March 28th at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine with a performance called Music in Desperate Times, Remembering the Women's Orchestra of Birkenau. Alice Radosh, the project's director, joins me now to talk about that event. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Music has always been an important part of German culture, and wasn't it especially important to the Nazi regime?
Yes. Well, of course, that's the conflict with this whole thing, that here you have probably the worst horrors you could have, and you have the beauty of music, and not everyone knows that there were, in fact, orchestras right in the concentration camps. Although Birkenau was different, as I'm sure you know, it was the only women's orchestra, and also there was nothing, quote, model about the Birkenau-Auschwitz camp. So, yes, music in the worst of circumstances, and music that kept people alive.
Now, the Birkenau was divided into several sections, which they kept from each other. There was a man's camp, a women's camp, two family camps, one for the Roma and Sinti, the other for Jews who'd been brought from Theresienstadt. And so was the women's orchestra put together for the women's camp?
It was in the women's camp, but it was a combination. There were Jews in the orchestra, and there were non-Jews in the orchestra as well. And it played really for the whole camp, because the transport trains, when they came in, the women came off of the train, and the orchestra would be playing in the worst of circumstances.
And what kind of music would they be playing?
Well, that's interesting, too. They were playing Schumann, they were playing Beethoven, they were playing Chopin. But they had to play on whatever instruments the women happened to come off the transport trains with. So it was Beethoven on mandolin, accordion, recorder, flute, and it had to be played beautifully, because these women would not have survived had they not played beautifully.
And they weren't supplied instruments?
No, in some cases
they were. I know some of the men were.
In some cases they were. In some cases, you know, people say, what were they doing going off a transport train with instruments? But, of course, they had suitcases with clothes. They didn't know the circumstances. So if you arrived with a flute or a violin, you were put aside. Rather than maybe going directly to a gas chamber, you were put aside, and it meant it saved your life. There were some instruments that were given to the women there. There's a wonderful story of a woman who was given accordion, and she played piano. This is a woman who's still alive today. And they said, can you play accordion? And she said, give me 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And came back, played a folk melody, and was put into the orchestra, and she is alive today because of that.
How many women were in the Birkenau Women's Orchestra?
It was a total of 54 over an 18-month period, and every single woman in the orchestra, except the conductor, every woman survived. And again, this was one of the worst death camps.
Now, why didn't the conductor survive?
It's not clear what the story is. She was poisoned. Was it intentional? Was it accidental? She's in a concentration camp, you know. So it was food poisoning.
She might have been killed by some of the other people involved in the orchestra who hated her?
It's not clear. I think she was beloved by the orchestra, and they understood that the way that she had to be demanding of them was the same thing that was going to keep them alive.
Did most of the members of the male concentration camp orchestras also survive?
You know, I don't know that. I know, and I always said,
I know many of them had to do work details as well.
Yes. I just 2 weeks ago met a young man at the time, who arrived with his violin and found his violin teacher already interred in Auschwitz. But I don't know whether or not all of them survived. I think it's miraculous that the women survived.
How did these women wind up in the orchestra? Did the SS officers seek out talented Jewish women and bring them to Birkenau?
No,
or did they
just
select the most talented prisoners already at the camp?
No, it truly was a question of in cases where you walked off the transport train carrying an instrument. And also Alma Rose, who was the conductor of the women's orchestra, came from a very prominent musical family. And she had been in charge of a women's orchestra prior to the camp. So the SS also permitted her to choose members of the orchestra, and she would try and choose everyone she could. If you weren't a top-flight musician, but you could write music, She'd have you transcribing music, writing music, arranging music, whatever you could possibly do.
Bach for mandolin.
Exactly. It's truly. It's Traumerei, you know, for guitar. It's amazing.
But they didn't play the marches that most of the men's orchestras were required to play?
There was some of that, yes. And, you know, they talk about the concert, which is going to be a week from Saturday, they talk about the fact, because there are readings in the concert, the fact that they would take Jewish folk music and turn it into marches. So the victims in the camp recognized it, but the SS didn't. But, yes, they did play marches.
Although you have to wonder whether there wasn't a certain amount of complicity, wasn't there? Because they were still doing the bidding of the Nazis, rather,
yes.
and making
Absolutely.
People feel a little more comforted at a time when, if anything, they should have been as discomforted as possible.
Absolutely, and it wasn't was their complicity. Definitely, these women feel that they were complicit. They understood at the time, and they said, "We played with tears in our eyes and guns at our back," was one of the quotes. And for them, the ones who survived, for the rest of their life, they had to live with the fact that they made things more comfortable, played for the pleasure of the SS, played to keep things calm when, as you say, things should not have been calm. You know, but they survived. And they will live forever with the pain of what they had to do, but they did it.
They were also, in some cases, living in relatively better conditions.
Relatively better.
They didn't have to shave their heads. There were all sorts of other things that they were spared.
Relatively better, which, in again, from the readings that we've done, it could mean that there was a piece of potato in an otherwise, liquid, so that it was not as if they had good conditions. And as we read from the memoirs a week from Saturday, you'll hear that the conditions were certainly not good for these women, but they did stay alive.
My guest is Alice Radosh, who is the project director of Women Music in Desperate Times, Remembering the Women's Orchestra of Birkenau. There'll be a concert a week from this Saturday at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. How did this is not the first performance of this.
No.
What do I call it, piece?
It's a concert. It's a performance. Mm-hmm. It was performed four times up in the Hudson Valley by Ars Choralis, which is a community chorus. They're all amateurs, but they're fabulous. And then a orchestra of 10 people to represent Birkenau has been hired, and then three people speaking from the memoirs. So it has been done before, but it's never been done. We've never gone to New York City, and now after that we're going to Berlin with this piece.
That should be a very interesting place to perform it.
Yes, to bring this music and the voices of the women and the music back is truly an honor.
And is it being played on the odd instruments?
Absolutely. The same instruments, not in the same proportion, but yes, there's a mandolin, there's a guitar, there's a violin. It's trying to really recreate the truth of this experience. And that's what the audience comes away with.
Many listeners will remember Playing for Time, Fania mm-hmm. Fenelon's autobiography, and mm-hmm. and Arthur Miller's film, which was based on it, starring Vanessa Redgrave.
Mm-hmm.
Was that was that a source for some of the material here?
It's a source of both. It's the one thing people know when I talk about this project. Oh yeah, I've heard of that. But it's also been a source of difficulty for us, because many of the survivors were very unhappy with the performance, which perhaps you know, and we talked about that in the program, the written program. They felt that it was Hollywoodized or made to look as if things were much better for the orchestra than in fact they were. So we try not to sensationalize and to really bring the truth of this story to the audience without turning it into a spectacle in any way.
And you said that you have other memoirs. How many people have supplied you with material?
The conductor of the orchestra, Barbara, of the chorus, Barbara Pickard, read Anita Lasker-Wallfisch's book, Inherit the Truth. And, in fact, we will probably meet Anita Lasker-Wallfisch, still alive, over in Berlin. She's coming from London to Berlin. Fania Fenelon, you mentioned that book. And then there's a book called Alma Rose, From Vienna to Auschwitz. And those were the primary sources.
How many of these women are still alive?
Well, you know,
they'd have to be in their 80s or 90s.
They're in their mid to eight ladies, 80s, and one in her 90s. So we've discovered that there are three. I thought two and possibly a third. 2 weeks ago, I got a call from somebody telling me that there's a survivor here in New York City who I think will not be able to come. She's physically impaired, but there are three survivors, and I've met with one of them in Germany, and I hope to meet another in April.
So one is living in Germany, but the others are no longer living in Germany, understandably.
One's living in London and has a very full music career, and then there's one here in New York City, and just found out about her. But the story and the voice of these women is what we are bringing back, all of them.
There was also choral music. There was vocal music that was performed as well, wasn't there?
Well, we are going to be doing that, and you know, we talk about it as almost a Greek chorus.
Well, Fania Fenelon was a singer, wasn't she?
She was a singer, and we are going to have people singing. Members of the some members of the orchestra did sing as well. Yes, she sang. Sang Madame from Madame Butterfly was a favorite with the SS. But what we have is a chorus that's going to be singing music of composers who are in some way associated with the Holocaust or with these kinds of stories.
Now, tell me a bit about Ars Choralis. How long has it been together?
Ars Choralis has been performing for over 40 years. It's been with the current conductor and artistic director for about 32 of those years, and it is a absolutely first-rate and totally volunteer group. And this whole performance is a volunteer performance.
What type of music do they typically perform?
Oh, it's a combination. There'll be holiday music, so you know we'll certainly have those concerts. When Katrina, we're raising money for New Orleans, they played music around that issue. Music of Peace, Messengers of Peace is one of the performances. So it's a group that has a social conscience and fabulous voices.
And what is your role in this whole project?
I actually got involved because the conductor of the orchestra has been my piano teacher for 10 years. And I saw the performance of Ars Choralis, and I heard the responses of people who saw it, including one woman who said, "This has really helped me with the work I do with battered women." Another person who wrote in and said, "This concert should be seen everywhere. It should be seen in Germany." So I went to my daughter who lives in Germany and talked with her about bringing it over there. And it has snowballed since then.
Meanwhile, this is going to be performed at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine.
Right.
Which is an amazing space, the largest Gothic cathedral in the world, I think, isn't
it? Yes, I think it is. Yes, fabulous space.
How did it wind up there?
The Reverend Canon for Liturgy and the Arts, Tom Miller, had been at a church in Woodstock. He knew the quality of Ars Choralis performances. And after I came back from Germany saying that they would like us to come and perform there, he said, "I would like you to come to Cathedral of St. John the Divine."
If you want more information about tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. These tickets are not free.
The tickets are $25, $35, $45, and if you want to make a donation and buy a ticket, $150 for the dress circle.
Meanwhile, we'll hear a little bit more of the music. My great thanks to Alice Radosh, who is the project director of Music in Desperate Times, Remembering the Women's Orchestra of Birkenau. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you very much.